I'm AJ Bianco, host of Reflect Ed, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
You know, we need to be the advocates for those that don't have the people pushing and telling them that they can do it.
Welcome to the Leader of Learning podcast. This is where educators can come to find inspiration to transform education through effective leadership. I'm your host, Dr. Dan Krynas, and my research and leadership experiences have led me to understand that someone like you, regardless of your role or your title, can truly make an impact in your organization. I chat with amazing guests who epitomize what it truly means to be a leader of learning. I'm so glad you've tuned in. Let's get started. Hey, Leader of Learning, and welcome to episode 107 of the Leader of Learning podcast. I mentioned earlier in the week, this will be the third and final week that we're releasing two episodes. But again, I hope you've enjoyed them, and I certainly hope that you've gotten a lot of value out of them. I know I have, and so I really hope you do as well. In this episode, my guest is Jessica Williams, an amazing leader from Long Island, New York, also a doctoral student. And what Jessica is looking to research is, in my opinion, an extremely important topic in education right now, and that is the topic of equity in access. In other words, are schools giving all students, regardless of their background, the same ability to enroll in advanced, honors, or gifted and talented courses? As always, I hope you get so much value out of this interview with Jessica on such an important topic. So, after this will be my interview with Jessica Williams. It is my privilege in this episode to bring on my guest, Jessica Williams, who, again, is one in a long line of amazing leaders that I've been bringing on in the months of January, February, and now March, who I've gotten to know through the Teach Better Mastermind group. Jessica's an amazing leader in New York, and I'm going to stop there and let her finish that introduction. So, Jessica, welcome to the show, and if you could please fill in a little bit more about who you are, where you are, and what you do.
Thank you so much, Dan. Thank you so much for having me on here. So as you said, I am currently right now, my role is Director of Curriculum and Instructional Technology in Long Island, New York. I was offered that position as of a year ago today. This last month, so January. Before that, I was an assistant principal. And then before that, I was a social studies teacher for 9 years at the middle school level. So that's a little bit
of another crazy middle school educator. We are a unique breed of human beings, I think, a very special breed. I've spent 15 years now, pretty much all at the middle school level. So it's interesting.
It is. I really enjoyed the middle school level a lot. And I spend a lot of my time there now as well. It is a special period of time, I think, for the kids. But they're so excited to learn and to have you, you really can make an impact with them. And I love the middle school.
Yeah, I do too. Again, crazy as it sounds, I really enjoy that age group and really being able to kind of mold and shape impressionable students who are going through an interesting time in their development. Anyway, you introduced yourself as a director of curriculum instruction, and I understand that you have maybe not been in that position for too long. I think I've had guests on the show who have been in similar roles, but I guess I'm sort of thinking as we go here that there might be people listening to this or watching who aspire to be in a role like that, or maybe they're a classroom teacher or a building leader, and they're not sure even what a director of curriculum and instruction does. Can you just kind of explain your work a little bit?
Sure. So I look at my work as really support for teachers, staff, for students, for families, and, especially as I took this role 2 months before the pandemic hit, I the beginning of it was really making relationships with a lot of stakeholders in the district, but then the pandemic hit and we really had to step it up and provide a lot of professional learning, support, instructional technology for teachers and staff who needed it. I did a lot of family workshops on the side for families at night for helping with those instructional platforms. You know, families had to do a lot more as the pandemic hit. And we do the same for students, getting students involved in instruction, getting their feedback, sending out surveys to them to get their feedback about their learning. That's a lot of what, you know, we did. Also, I work with, the building administration a lot to do a lot with the students. You know, we do community book reads that we're having soon. We do professional learning. So also my role is kind of all over the place in that sense, but I love it and I love the work that I do. I look at it as a lot of learning and continual growth.
That's great. And I kind of had a feeling you'd sort of say that it was all over the place. I'm sure you wear many hats. And one of the things that we talked about before hitting record here was that we share in common that we're both working out of multiple buildings and looking to support as best we can across, I guess it's three, in our case, three buildings. And it's not easy. And so I commend you for trying to do that, because I've been doing that for the last few months now in my new role. And that's probably one of the most challenging parts of what I do. Now, I know that in addition to your work in your district and in your schools that you support, you're also going back to school yourself. And I actually didn't know this about you until recently. So I don't know whether it's a recent decision, a recent move you've made, but welcome to the world of being a doctoral student. How is that going? And I guess, what are you looking to do with that? Or what are you into right now in terms of your doctoral journey?
So my doctoral journey actually started a couple of years ago. I am finished with coursework now, so I'm really working on writing. But I just started that this semester working with a mentor. But, I wanted to continue my professional growth and my learning, and that was really my intent to go back for my doctorate, to reach that level of growth as a person, professionally and personally. And so it's been great. I've really delved into topic that I hoped would be not only interesting but useful for the position that I'm in as well. I have really delved into, the equity piece to more specifically advanced placement programs. But, I've tried to really include, my district in that process and others, and move forward with learning about what the equity piece to it.
Now, I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, that when you say equity in, I think, AP courses is what you mentioned, what you really are saying there is that your passion and your goal, I guess, is to make sure that we spread the wealth in terms of admitting students in and making sure that all students have the opportunity to enroll in those courses and, dare I say, succeed in those courses. And I find that to be very interesting, because my school, the school that I came out of, and really a lot of the schools across my district are, and I realize we're kind of late to the game here in 2021, but they've fairly recently, this school year and maybe last school year, really taken a good hard look at equity in gifted and talented classes. So I think in a lot of ways, we have that in common. That's not necessarily the work that I'm involved in, but I know it's work that's going on across my district. So, what have you found? Maybe what are some of the things that your school or district is doing? Or if they're not there yet, what are some things that you're seeing to help make sure that we're allowing and helping and supporting students on a broader scale and in a more diverse and a more equitable way?
So my district itself has a program called Challenge by Choice, and it was implemented 10 years ago. And that allows the students to choose what kind of program they would like to put themselves into or how they want to challenge themselves. So, you know, they could either take an AP class or not take an AP class. But the decision is ultimately up to them, that there are no barriers for them. Well, with that being said, though, in some classes, there are prerequisite classes that they have to take. However, there are no stakeholder barriers. So, you know, what I've seen in a lot of this work is that while having those barriers or those trackings, you know, having stakeholders, you know, have them kind of go through a set of hoops in order to get into challenging classes, it may not be inherently bad thing, but what winds up happening is that students wind up becoming really separated, and they become separated by class, SES, race, ethnicity, behavior, and some of them are not based on the merit that or the will motivation that they could have to succeed in those classes.
So I have sort of a follow-up question to that. So yeah. As you were just talking about some of the ways in which traditionally and historically students access to advanced courses haven't been so equitable. I haven't been a part of it too much, but I think what I've sensed, and I'm wondering if you could speak to this a little bit too, is also for lack of a better word, I'm going to say privilege. Yeah. And when I say privilege, I also mean parental privilege, like families who are close in the sense that they have supportive and vocal parents tend to be ones who get opportunities like that. That's in my limited experience with how this all works. That's what I find, that when parents advocate for their students and sometimes become a thorn in the side of the administrators and people who have the ability to place students, they're the ones who win out. I see you nodding. I'm guessing you agree.
Absolutely. I could not agree with you more. That's exactly what winds up happening. And, you know, we need to be the advocates for those that don't have the people pushing and telling them that they can do it and that they can enter into a challenging class and succeed. And give them that self-confidence, you know, so that they have the self-efficacy to make it happen.
I'm glad you said that. And I think that's extremely important that we, and when you say we, again, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to put words in your mouth. You're saying us educators, teachers, administrators, that we need to help those students, especially the ones who don't have those parent advocates or can't advocate for themselves because they're, you know, kind of young and immature, for lack of a better word, in the grand scheme of, you know, the world around them. And so we need to step up more. Specific to that point, what are some ways that educators can do that? What are some systems maybe that schools can put in place so that the educators themselves can do more than the students and the parents in terms of making sure that we're really giving opportunities to everyone who deserves it?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. First, the obvious is the policy decisions that are being made, in that students they need to be allowed to enter these classes, no matter, you know, what. So, I think that is an open conversation too. And the kids that are kind of pushed into it, it changes. The second thing that I wanted to bring is that it changes the mindset. And the mindset needs to be different for the students, but the parents, the staff, everybody together, in that, you know, in order for that almost that growth mindset to happen, that, you know, learning is not fixed. It's not something that is necessarily innate. It's something that people can grow, and that you need to enforce that and push that and really believe in it, I think is really the most important thing. And you find the teachers, you know, coupled with that policy that are allowing kids to enter into challenging curriculum and have high expectations, coupled with the fact that you really think that they can grow and have that mindset, brings success for more kids.
I want to ask a couple of really pointed questions, and based on what you just said about mindset, and I'm hoping you can help me here. So I guess the first is, like, who then would be students who really should not be in some kind of advanced placement or gifted and talented class?
Well, my thoughts on that might be
No, I'm interested in your thoughts, because I think it speaks to that mindset piece. And so I'm thinking that I'm hoping anyway, that if I'm right, your answer here is due to your open-mindedness and your growth mindset, whereas maybe educators who are a bit stuck in the past or not yet ready to kind of get out of their fixed mindset might hold a bit of a different opinion here. So again, like, who should not be in these kind of advanced classes?
I mean, and if you look at research too, everybody should be in a curriculum that they can access. That's, you know, equity focused and that challenges everybody. So if you give people the support and the mindset shift, then the focus is that you can do it. You can be successful. And I don't think anyone should be barred out of a class that challenges them and that, you know, might bring them to that, you know, zone of proximal development, you know, as like that, you know, as we talk about in like doctoral work, but that zone of pushing and your peers helping. And my thought is that everybody can do it.
That's awesome. It's well said. And, you know, one of the things I'm going to let all the listeners in on a little secret, if you are or maybe are thinking about becoming a doctoral student, you know, we sort of get the advice like to pick our topics based on, of course, our passions, but really topics that have maybe been researched, but not the way you want to research it, so that there's enough research out there that you can draw from when you're conducting your literature review and your study, but not saturated with research so that it's just like it's been done and, you know, basically there's nothing else that can be done about it. Is this type of work something that you're finding to be a little bit more currently relevant in you know, kind of the times that we're living in now? As I said before, I think in my school district, it has definitely come to the forefront more these last two school years. And it should have been before. I get it. I definitely, you know, in hindsight, being 2020 and all, we should have known better, but we didn't. So what are you finding there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that equity piece has really become the forefront in many different ways. You know, this is just kind of one, you know, one aspect of it in schooling and education system. But the equity focus has definitely become very much you know, more focused on. And we obviously implemented this program, the Challenge by Choice program, years ago, but we have recently created an equity team that focuses on, you know, more than that. And it's also not over, you know, like there's always things to, you know, pieces of this open enrollment program to go back to, you know, is it working? Is the choice working for different groups of students? You know, just because you can enter something doesn't mean that you will. And how are people, you know, informally also affecting the Challenge by Choice program? So all of that, you know, improving, but also working to work on that equity lens in other ways as well.
Yeah, great. Well, I know obviously that's so much of what you're doing, especially as a doctoral student, but even in your work as the director of curriculum instruction. So I appreciate all of that talk on equity, because it's extremely important, and I'm glad that we could bring light to it here in this episode. I also know that you are passionate about in your role and just being an educator, like really helping to bridge that gap between school and home and really bring families in as partners. And it sounds like you're doing that through these community shows and book groups and things. So I guess in the last little bit of time that we have here, talk a little bit more about how you're helping to, you know, really make sure that families stay involved in their kids' education.
So like I said before, families always need to be brought into the education sphere as much as possible. But especially as COVID hit, I think people felt very separated. And they felt kind of disjointed from school, especially when we were on remote learning. So, you know, we have not been on remote learning at all this year. There is a group of students who have chosen to be on remote learning, but for the school as a whole, we have not been. So, you know, during that time, and even now, we last year created a show. It was called Thursday Night Live, and we just did different shows with staff members and it was live, obviously, and the kids signed in and families watched, and they, you know, in the chat were able to participate in it. But we did anything and everything to get people to feel like they were a part of the school community still. We did a cooking show together. We did local history where we went to different, you know, teachers and staff went to different places and kids could ask questions. And we did, our AP students were able to teach a class and show science experiments to the younger students and ask them questions. So just try to do everything possible to make people feel involved.
That's great. You know, I think it's funny you mentioned how families felt a little more distant and disconnected. I'm not taking anything away from that. However, I think I've said this on the show before, and if I haven't, let me say it now. As an educator especially, one of the things that last spring in terms of how schools dealt with COVID, one of the things that did for me is to allow me to get a better glimpse into my own kids and how they are as learners and students. Because, you know, especially I have a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old. And if you have kids or have had kids at that age, you know that you ask them when they come home, how was school? It was good. And you don't get a lot out of them on most days. But it allowed me to really get to work with them and support them. And yes, it was frustrating because I had a job to do, and yet I was at home trying to support them through their work as well. But as frustrating as it got at times, I appreciated that actually. And so I think for me, the further we got away from feeling involved at the school, at least at home, I actually felt more involved in terms of supporting my own kids. And I don't know, I guess I'm grateful to that, because now I definitely have a better understanding of how they learn and really what motivates them to learn, you know, and what they're most interested in. So I guess I just wanted to throw that out there and just see what you felt about that too.
No, I agree with you. I'm grateful for the time, right? It made us refocus a little bit, our priorities, and focus on each other and relationships with each other. And ultimately, that's the most important thing. Yes, I think it did give insight as to the different, you know, what people were struggling with and maybe what people really enjoy. It gave us a lot of feedback for teaching even when we're not remote. So that's a huge plus, even though.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know you said that for the most part, really, your schools have been in person this year. I wish. So where I work, we've been pretty much in person, but my kids, sometimes they go in and out. Most of the time they're in person, but there have been some days and some weeks at a time where they've been home. And definitely what I have learned about them as students has helped me and my wife be able to support them better when they are doing their remote learning from home. So I just wanted to get that in there because I thought that what you said was great, but also the fact that maybe for some people like me, being a little further away from, distanced from schools has actually helped in some ways. But anyway, we're going to wrap up here. I really appreciate everything that we've talked about here, especially that equity piece and really allowing access to all students who want to be in those kind of advanced classes and classes, like you said before, that really meet the students where they're at, but will really challenge them. So I think your study that you're starting to work on here and your doctoral work is important. I think all the research that goes into that topic is really important. And as we mentioned before, even though maybe schools were a little bit late to the game, as schools kind of wake up a little bit more to the fact that they need to take that topic more seriously, I think that's really great. But before we go, if you could just let everyone know how they can connect with you and find you and follow you and ask you more questions if they have more, the need for more information.
Sure. So my Twitter is JessicaT_Wills, and I love connecting with people. So I am always open to any conversation, and I really appreciate being on here. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you being on here. I know it took a little while. That's okay, though. But, you know, we've spoken a couple times in this episode even about connections and relationships, and to be connected to you and the rest of the folks who are regulars in the mastermind has absolutely been, you know, one of the best things that professionally has happened to me in the last 12 months. So I appreciate you for that. And thanks for your time here and coming on the show and enlightening the listeners a little bit about that equity piece. So thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Well, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't done so yet, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. Also, if you enjoy the content shared on the show, please recommend this podcast to other educators, leaders, friends, or anyone you think would love listening and learning. I would also appreciate it if you would leave a positive rating and review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or whatever podcast app you use to listen. For more information about me or this show, head over to leaderoflearning.com. While you're there, you can also find the Leader of Learning blog, how to connect on social media such as Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Voxer, sign up for our newsletter, and even find out how to purchase Leader of Learning merchandise. Thanks again, and remember, no matter who you are or where you are, you too can be a leader of learning.